This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
For the most part, of course, sometimes they do this, they call it vanity sizing, where you think you want to wear a 30, it's actually like 34 inches, but I don't think what I'm getting does that. Yeah. Ian McNulty, have you ever bought a pair of pants on Facebook or not?
No, sir, I have not.
I don't know. Yeah. Well, because you know why? I can't buy off the rack. I got to have everything altered. So recently I found places that sell pants that fit me, and I don't have to have them altered. Now whenever I see it, I grab them, and I got a closet full of pants, and I don't know what to do with them.
You know what my size is, Tommy? Extra medium. That's what I am.
Are you really extra medium? It's a good size.
Sometimes double X.
Good size king cake to get as well. We talk eating and drinking with Ian McNulty at this time of day and this time of week, and that's what we're doing right now. Happy Mardi Gras, Ian McNulty.
Oh, yeah. We are into it, baby. I'm ready for this cold weather to fizzle off and for New Orleans to truly embrace the next run of, what is it, Czechs watch, 10 days until Ash Wednesday brings the curtain on it all.
Until St. Patrick's Day and St. Joseph's Day, you know.
Yeah. Truly a great time to be in New Orleans. And this is the time of year where I get a lot of requests for late night dining, right? Mm-hmm. Or late night food in general. You know, dining may be too fine of a point on it. But you're out late, your daily rhythms are a little different, your schedules are different, people are going to balls downtown, they're getting out, those balls were kind of boring, they sat through it, they need a proper meal and a good drink. Or they're out in the parades, they're partying, and, you know, they waited for the parade to get over until they left. So now they're, it's later than the normal dinner hour, and they're hungry. And that was my spur, guys, to take a look at the landscape of late-night dining around New Orleans. And it won't be a surprise to anyone to learn that it's changed greatly over the last few years. I mean, it's changed enormously if we want to rewind the tape back to the pre-Katrina era, you know, the reign of the Hummingbird Grill and La Paniche and such legends of late night. But since the pandemic, there's been really almost a precipitous collapse in late night dining. I mean, you could almost say that it nearly went extinct there for a while. And there's some really compelling reasons for why that happened. But as I did my research and started digging into it, what I've found are signs of a comeback, of a bit of renewal in the ranks of late-night food options, from dining to simply stuff in your face, and a really surprising range in some cases. And so they've got a pair of stories on NOLA.com now that give the deep dive, one kind of laying out why all this happened, where we stand now, and another sort of neighborhood by neighborhood guide, a running list that we'll be adding to, by the way, of restaurants and bars, everything from your bar burger to oysters and caviar after midnight, available around the city. So it's a topic that comes up a lot this time of year, and happy to dive into it.
It seems like a lot changed after Katrina, not just with restaurants and where to eat 24 hours, but grocery stores, too. They used to have 24-hour grocery stores and drug stores. I don't know if that's a national thing or just here after Katrina, but a lot changed then.
Yeah, it certainly did. And it was the full stop effect of Katrina. Mm-hmm. There's enough time between then and now, Tommy, that, you know, I feel like sometimes we do have to remind and explain mm-hmm. to people that it wasn't just a massive hurricane that hit and knocked out the power and ripped off roofs and such and did all that. But that the levee failures that flooded the city and had the water sit there and forced the evacuation of a major American city was really unprecedented in modern times, mm-hmm. Almost biblical. And the grand restart that it took to make all that happen was lengthy and arduous and accomplished by great grit and heart of the people who did it. But it took a long time. And so things that have been running smoothly, more or less, or in their own rattle-trap fashion for a long time, getting them back started again, some very difficult and sometimes impossible. And New Orleans is a place filled with quirky, interesting joints. And unfortunately, we lost a lot of them in that switchover. The pandemic is actually a similar dynamic. Mm-hmm. Just look at restaurants. All restaurants had to close on a dime with the closure orders. Reopening was not so quick. It only came in phases and limited by whatever phase they were in or what they felt comfortable with, what they wanted to do, what the health situation was, and thus an undulating, uneven course. And so restaurants that were normally open 24 hours found themselves reopening for one shift. And then so you build on that, you expand on that, you see where the demand is, some dining habits change, night owls turned into early birds. And then, another knock-on effect of this all is things have gotten much more expensive. It's more expensive for the restaurants to stay open that late and maybe not worth it if it's slow, and it's more expensive for people to live their lives. And so maybe they're not splurging on that burger and cocktail at 11 o'clock. After all, maybe they're just cooking a frozen pizza when they get home. Maybe they're not going out as much. And so the people who work late night shifts out of the restaurants and bars, which make up a huge part of the late night bar customer base themselves, maybe they didn't make as much money. And so maybe they're not feeling as flush to go out and have that burger and drink and such. But that's how we got to the situation of very little late night dining. What I'm seeing is more restaurants and bars expanding those hours, testing the waters, and finding more people eager to be at their doors, including what I mentioned, that customer base. It's not just people who are like out till 3 a.m. and are hammered and need a burger to sober up. It's people who are working until midnight or 2 a.m, whether that's at restaurants, bars, or hospitals, or public safety, what have you. The great all-night diners and dives of New Orleans, when we walked in, they were filled with EMS people and people in scrubs from different hospitals and such. It's that whole nighttime economy of the city that needs to eat and might actually like a drink after work, too, even if they have to work for that 3 a.m. So one of the spurs for this was Buffa's Lounge, the great Buffa's Lounge on Esplanade Avenue, trimmed in neon. They've gone back to 24/7 service, including, keeping the kitchen open the entire time. Breakfast menu check out these hours, Tommy, from midnight to noon. That's their breakfast. That's their breakfast shift. And it struck me as, okay, well, that's good. That's a place that was 24 hours, is getting back into it, and made me look around. And I'm telling you, there's upscale options. There's places in the suburbs. There's your classic dives. You expect to see Tom Waits scribbling lyrics on a swivel stool next to you. And there's, upscale places that feel like you're dining at a bistro long after the chairs have been put up on the tables at actual bistros around town. It's an interesting time to take a look at it because of the way Carnival stretches our hours. And I think people who start poking around will find a lot more available to them. They don't necessarily have to just hit the drive through or go to the chain diners that are, of course, operating 24/7 based on their structures.
As you said that, I wonder if Taco Bell, the dreaded Taco Bell, has anything to do with that, with the late night hours and just like you're talking about with the economy and people just looking for something to stuff in their face as opposed to maybe having a real decent meal?
Yeah, that's part of it, too. I mean, it's those are big companies, have the economies of scale, and they figured out how to do a lot of that stuff. But, I want the local character,
I do, too. What I used to love, the coffee shop in the Fairmont, I think it was. Is that the Fairmont that you can get to from two streets, one side or the other? And a coffee shop used to be 24 hours, and that used to be a great way to go, a great place to go late at night and have some of those alcohol-absorbing waffles or whatever you wanted, scrambled eggs or you name it. What was the name?
Yeah, that's right. That's the Fairmont then, now called the Roosevelt.
Yeah.
And actually, that's a good cue, because right around the corner from there is a great late-night spot that's a good example of this variety I'm talking about. It's called Cleo's Mediterranean Cafe and Grocery. It's right on the corner there by the Orpheum, too, so good if you're getting out of the Orpheum. And you walk in there, and it's like a little deli, a little counter service kind of place with falafel and salads and roasted eggplant and kebabs, imported candy from around the world, stocked in the shelves everywhere. Used to be 24/7, now is open like from until about 5 a.m. So
close enough, yeah.
But interesting, important topic. I'll preview this by saying, like, we've seen the headlines, like the crime rates are declining in the city and the suburbs alike, and sometimes faces into historically low levels. But security is a concern for a lot of the restaurant operators. It's, when I talk to them, say, hey, what about, later hours, 24/7? That it's one of the top things that comes out of their mouth. So, that is still a very heavy shadow over all of this also. So, while things are improving on that front, perhaps it'll have the effect of seeing more places stay open and keep the lights on and keep the doors open.
Let me take a quick break. We'll pick it up. We come back. We'll talk about some of Ian McNulty's favorite places to eat and drink late at night. And also, I want you to text me yours on the Oquinar Jeweler Talk and text line at 504-260-1870. Maybe places that you used to go to that you miss and aren't there anymore, or some of your favorite places to go. And if you have any questions about eating or drinking in New Orleans, Sunday is going to be a cold, rainy day. Maybe you're looking for some good comfort food or something like that. Give me a text, 504-260-1870. I'll pass them along to Ian McNulty. He covers food and dining culture for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate. I'm Tommy Tucker. This is WWL.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
9:27 now, best time of the week, talking to Ian McNulty, covers food and dining culture for the Times-Picayune. New Orleans Advocate, he's focused on some late-night places to eat. Aren't as many as there used to be, but I guess, Ian, they're making a comeback? Maybe?
Yeah. It's tentative. These things, late-night doesn't happen over.
I'm seeing a picture here of and you can get to that in a second, the Swamp Room. Charlize Blasio, 20-plus-year patron of the Swamp Room. I'm guessing she may have had something to drink when you took that picture or not.
That was my man, the great David Grunfeld, who snapped that one. So you would have to address the condition of the subject. But the Swamp Room is open, Tommy, until 3:30 in the morning. Now, that is good intel to have. That's the classic New Orleans bar burger, right? Mm-hmm. The kind that you get at Port of Call, probably created the template. Harbor nearby also opened very late in Metairie, Oscars, the beach corner, Canal Boulevard. Knowing that it's not just like, getting out of the party or whatever, or getting off of your ship. Like I said, sometimes you come in off a late flight, it was a hell of a flight. Maybe you don't want to go straight home. You don't want to tuck into a booth and get one of those burgers in front of you and just mellow out for a little bit. Like that's another one of the great utilities of that place.
But Tim tells me a great hot fudge sundae at the Swamp Room. He gets them all of the time. Tim's our man about town. He could be the successor to you, Ian McNulty, Tim Zimmer, who goes all about these places and eats and drinks. He says they got a great, what is it, Hot Fudge Sundae? Hot Fudge Cookie Sundae, which I would imagine would absorb some alcohol, a little bit or two. But you know what I'm thinking, too? You almost have to divide it into places where you want to stop drinking and get breakfast, or maybe you want to keep drinking and have a burger, right?
Yeah, sure. And when you take a look at the story and the list, you can see that, there's a lot of places to get a burger out there, especially in the French Quarter, in Madrid, like we mentioned, over on the West Bank. I mean, Vinny's Sports Bar and Grill is open until 7 in the morning. Burgers and wings, that kind of thing. But then, if you're looking for something, like I said, like maybe you are coming out at an event. Maybe you still have the number one clothes on,
Mardi Gras ball.
Up.
You might be coming home from a ball.
Right. Yeah. You've got the Bullini Tavern. It's the lounge next door to Lillette, that restaurant that Taylor Swift just put newly on the map for some. Bullini Tavern is their more casual but still very upscale lounge, mid-century modern sort of Mad Men vibe inside. Food until midnight, 1 a.m. on the weekends, and nice food. They do have a burger, actually, but, mussels and fries, caviar, oysters, that sort of thing. Over on St. Charles Avenue, the Delachaise. I mean, that's the place that raised the bar for bar food back in the pre-Katrina era. Still going strong, almost 30 years in, perhaps, almost certainly 25 years. That's a place that has variable hours now, which is kind of the case at a lot of these places. You ask them, what's your last call for the kitchen? They say, well, we play it by ear. We see what the demand is night to night. But you can reliably go in there after 10 o'clock and get, like I called it before, bistro-worthy food after the bistros have closed down. And then there's new additions that are building in these later night hours. A restaurant you and I have talked about before, just opened last fall, is 34. That's Emeril Lagasse's Portuguese restaurant. Modern, stylish, upscale. They switch over to a happy hour menu from, 10 to midnight. Mm-hmm. And they also have a DJ. One of the booths in the dining room is actually a DJ station. So it kind of changes the vibe a little bit, as the hour gets later. Another example of that would be the Bar Car. Okay, that's a newer place on Metairie Road. It used to be the Metairie Cafe, a classical dive by the railroad tracks. They switch over to a late night menu. Probably 10 to midnight, definitely until midnight. That's the time frame for that. A shorter menu, the kitchen can field it, but available to you until midnight. And so these are kind of the steps that places are taking to gauge demand, maybe get people back into the rhythm of it's after 10 o'clock, I can still go out. Now, caveat to that story is sometimes it's surprising where you can land after normal dinner hours. And just this week, as I'm in the midst of writing this guide of late night spots, I had a visitor in town and we head out for dinner later than usual. No problem, I think. I've got this late night thing locked down. But it was a Wednesday, and a lot of the places that I know had midnight hours weren't open on Wednesday. We wanted something really New Orleansy because we had a visitor from out of town, not just another bar burger. So here we were at almost 9:30, I want to say, maybe even minutes after that. We see the lights are on at Vincent's Italian Cuisine on St. Charles Avenue. All right, we'll give it a shot. We walk in, no question. They're open. They're open till 10. That means they're seating. And we sat down and had a magnificent meal on a chilly night of red sauce, cannelloni, meatballs, dark red wine from Italy, a martini to start things off. I mean, it was really nice. And that was not a place that qualifies as late night to me because they close at 10.
What time was that, Ian?
We walked in around, let's check the watch. I think it was 9:38.
So there you go. That brings up a question, which is, and so a lot of people are texting this in, if a restaurant says they closes at X, what's really the latest that you should go in? Because I don't feel comfortable going in a restaurant closes at 10 like you did at 9:30, but you say that's okay.
Well, you play it by ear. I walked in there about 30% confident we would get sat down. And I fully expected them to say, the kitchen just closed. Mm-hmm. It often is a play it by ear kind of situation. You can call first, I suppose, but I do respect a place that says lists, we are open till 10, we're open till 10. I mean, I think that's fair.
Yeah, because what does that mean? Actually, does it mean if they don't want you to come in before 10, then they should close at 9, right?
Mm-hmm. A good example of this is a late night place, which I was actually surprised to see put on my list. Fresco. It's on Maple Street near the universities. Uh-huh. They close at 1, but actually they close at 12:45. So at 12:45, they're taking their last order. When, in fact, they probably turn this door to sign to closed at 1. Uh-huh. So it's a pizza place, lavash wraps, Italian dishes, that kind of thing, popular with the college crowd up there. So I understand the text. There's not probably an overall universal answer to it, and that's why it helps to kind of get to know a place, right? Like you don't like to walk into a restaurant, you know, 5 minutes before they listed closing time and see them vacuuming and putting up the chairs and say, no, start it all up again. I just don't want to be that guy, right? Mm-hmm. And they may not take you anyways, which was why going into Vincent's was a pleasant surprise. I mean, the hospitality couldn't have been better, couldn't have been more professional. It was fun and cheeky in New Orleans. The food was great. And we left counting that as a major win for late night dining, even though it does not technically qualify, in my book anyway, as late night dining. But sometimes that spirit of hospitality wins out.
Mm-hmm. Somebody's looking for a classic. I remember going to this place on the West Bank. Pogo's was the name of it. It was in a hotel, and it was after a St. Patrick's Day parade meeting. And I wasn't driving, but I remember having pancakes, and I was pouring the syrup onto the pancakes and was running down the knife that was on the side of the plate onto my pants. And I thought it was the funniest thing in the world because, of course, you know, I shouldn't have been that drunk, but I was. People are looking for places like where you can have that kind of breakfast kind of thing without necessarily drinking and maybe some coffee to get ready to go to work.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, that is the classic diner, and it's a bit of a dying breed. I mean, on the West Bank, coffee and definitely qualifies for that. It's a Marrero. That's swivel stools, kind of donut shop. They do a really good king cake, by the way, a donut king cake. Over on this side, you've got TikTok Cafe in Metairie, right on Causeway, from a busy intersection right there off the highway. So that makes a lot of sense. I wish I had a few more of them in New Orleans for you. You know, Betsy's used to be really good with that on Canal Street by the hospitals, but their hours have been curtailed, you know, ever since the pandemic, I suppose, maybe even before. That's the other strategy, Tommy, is to find places that open very early because, you know, it depends how late you are out, but find you a good breakfast place that opens at 5 a.m., 6 a.m. If you're still out at that hour, you're catching them fresh on the other side of things.
Somebody texted in with the cold weather coming in on Sunday and rainy. They say since we can't go to the parades, and look, nothing's been canceled, but it's not looking good. They're looking for some good Italian hearty food.
Oh, yes. Oh, and first of all, this reminds me, weeks ago, maybe even months ago, a caller asked about something and it stumped me, but I've got an answer for that, which fits this theme, not exactly, but stick with me. The caller was looking for chili, good place for really good chili. Parkway Tavern. I had since that call, it had been in my mind, and I went to Parkway. I wasn't looking for chili, but there it was, smack dab on the menu, right under my nose. I got it. It was terrific. Chopped onions and cheese.
And where was that?
Very comforting. Parkway Bakery.
Parkway, okay.
Yeah, so, you know, po' boys and chili, if you're looking for that, put that on your list. Hopefully the caller from long ago will hear that. Thank you. Like I said, with Vincent's, that heartiness of red sauce. I mean, gosh, take your pick. Last time we went to Mandina's, knocked it out of the park with meatballs and red sauce, plus some fried chicken and onion rings. I'm partial to Genduza's in Kenner and Rivertown there. Big, hearty portions. They're going to feed you twice. You've got, it's your classic Italian red sauce joints.
What about Venetia's on the West Bank? How are they doing? Do you know?
Sorry, which one's that?
Venetia's on the West Bank?
Yeah, oh, booming. Yeah, that's a great example. The city Venetia's in Gretna there. Took over the old Tony Mandina's. No relation to Mandina's city. Same menu, bigger space, banquet space. They've got the lights all lit up now. If you go on, if you're passing the West Bank Expressway, you can see the Italian colors tracing the exterior of it. That's been what a slam dunk that was. To lose Tony Mandine is sad, but you know, nice for the family to move on to their next chapter, retire. But for Venezia's to step in and kind of double down with what they do, that's a great win.
Somebody's looking for Jamaican food, Ian.
Oh yeah, it's a good time for that. We've got a lot of good players. 14 Parishes is one that's always top of my list. Two locations, one on Oak Street, one on Patterson in Algiers, right by the levee. It's traditional, a lot of heart and soul, a lot of personality and character, great cocktails, great rum drinks, which you don't always find at your typical island joints. Some Boswell's in Mid-City is kind of the classic hole-in-the-wall joint. This Jamaican Jerk House in the Bywater, Ninth Ward area on St. Claude, also excellent. Those would be top picks.
I was driving around old Algiers last Saturday. As a matter of fact, I like to just go out and drive around, and it is amazing what has happened at the point in old Algiers, if you have not been there lately, not just in terms of restaurants, but people that have moved in, real estate, et cetera. There's something going on there.
Oh, yeah. Algiers Point is really feels good right now. And as usual in New Orleans, it's the restaurant and hospitality scene leading the way. If you step off the ferry, which you know, could have a huge impact on how that area develops. Mm-hmm. Visitors coming over and supporting those businesses. You've got the new Nighthawk pizzeria, Neapolitan style wood fire pizza next to the classic Dry Dock Cafe around the corner. Congregation Coffee is back. I mentioned 14 Parishes. You've got Barracuda Tacos tucked into the neighborhood there. If you go a little further off, Plume Algiers, a fantastic mom-and-pop Indian restaurant that's always worth a visit. And boy, talk about cold weather coming in. Indian food has its own comfort food quotient that's off the charts. Might not be the first thing everyone thinks about if you've got Italian or, you know, roast beef po'boys on your mind. But you tuck into a gently spicy, richly flavored curry over some aromatic basmati rice. That's taken me there.
So you mentioned Lillette, and before Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift dined there, Jennifer Coolidge and Joe Montana were seen dining there, which brings up a kind of interesting story. I saw a young lady in an elevator, and I said, "My, you look like Jennifer Coolidge." And she said, "Really? I don't know who that is." I said, "Yeah, Google it." Well, I was talking about Jennifer Connelly, not Coolidge, so I imagine she's still angry at me about that. But anyway... Thank you, Ian McNulty. That's why you should never address women in the elevator at all. Ian McNulty covers food and dining culture for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate. We'll take a break. Come back. Get you some weekend winners with JR here on WWL, 941, 19 till 10. Traffic now, WWL.